We are recording.
Alrighty, see, it's 7:03 now. We'll call to order the Thursday, March 12th, 2015, regular meeting and public hearing of the Planning Commission meeting. First item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for February 26th, 2015.
Chair, I move to adopt this as presented.
Second.
Okay, a motion by Dick, second by Jim. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. Seeing no one from the public in presence, I will go ahead and formally open the public hearing now. And seeing no one from the public, we will close the public hearing on item number 3.
Good sound effect.
It has to be open and closed.
That's right. That's right.
Item number...
Oh, here comes Brenda.
Oh, sorry. Public comment on non-agenda items is what I was trying to do.
You did it.
Yeah, you got it.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Okay, we can go home now.
Okay. So item number 4 is the public hearing on indoor commercial recreation facilities. Is there anybody from the public wishing to speak? Seeing none, we can...
Oops.
Did you... Do you want to speak? Sorry.
Well, I did want to say that I met with Nella Cummings from Encompass last week, and then I told Lynn this also, that the current position that I have out there on Bolt, that's not a good place for the proposed gun range, but I would like to still go ahead with the indoor commercial recreation zoning variance request, but not for a gun range. Okay. I like the zoning out at Taylor. That's probably a good spot.
And could you state your name and
address? Oh, sorry. Beth Burrows, 312 Northeast 6th Street, open.
Okay. Seeing no one else from the public, we'll go ahead and close the indoor commercial recreation public hearing.
And do you want me to kind of give a little summary of
the land use?
There's a tiny few changes that were made that I could probably just summarize real quick. As Beth just indicated, the desire for this particular interest was no longer at the USOD zone, but you'll also know that the process that you're embarking on here regulates the use citywide, not any particular person. So what I wanted to note was in the packet material you have, you'll see that if you turn to page 2, you'll see under the chart where the indoor shooting range is listed, there is currently no P under the USOD. That P should still be there. We took it out because of the conversation, but it was, you know, it wasn't something you guys had asked us to do, so just go ahead and mark a P back in there. And then as you deliberate, what we did is we have the shooting range allowed in the 3 districts that you guys had suggested, which is the USOD, the EP1, and the EP2. So that's the only one clarification. The next clarification is we did some more research. We did continue the hearing for another meeting because we did not know if we were going to be able to do enough research to, to satisfy your questions. But we did some more research and found some additional performance standards that other communities had used, not necessarily in Washington. We're truthfully not finding a lot. But you'll see we added those. So that will be something else you can, ultimately, we're not looking for a recommendation tonight because we did continue the hearing for next meeting to give it ample time to get your questions answered. So that's the only other change to the staff report at this point. So.
Mm-hmm. Probably because my ear, and I thought that last time we met, we in fact did alter the use chart where we were recommending the indoor range be in the E22 and not in the USOD. Is that not your motion?
No, that was not. It was just to include EP1 and EP2.
Okay, but not to remove it.
Correct.
All right.
So I think where I believe we are is between now and next meeting, we're hoping for a recommendation next meeting. The areas you discussed, again, is, you know, whether where it belongs in what districts. And then the discussion that I recall around the USOD was, did you find it pertinent to have buffers to schools? If you wanted to do that, that would be something that we would want to bring back as a proposal for you. And then just any other questions that you may have. So we can bring back everything.
So is there any thoughts on buffers?
My thought is just as straightforward. I don't care where the range would be, but to resolve any questions of who may be adjacent or nearby or across the street, I'd love to have us have a conversation about barricade kind of line of sight. You know, imagining that, you know, father and son team go in for practice and somebody forgets to unload their rifle and they're walking back out to the car and it gets dropped and it goes off. That kind of a barricade buffer for the parking area called transition area. That would make me feel better, and then we could say, hey, it can go anywhere, because the semi-foolish thing that possibly could happen that we might imagine, the error that somebody could make, that would solve a lot of that. It's not the round that goes up and comes down a mile away. It's the round that goes straight ahead and hits something or goes through a wall. So that was my buffer piece. And the other, I guess, is related to sound, and that's almost like an internal. That's got to be part of the construction process. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Elizabeth?
I actually think that we do need to address the issue of buffers around schools, but we also need to talk about what our definition of school is. Is it going to be everybody that has an in-home daycare? Is that going to qualify as a school? Because some of the employment park come up against areas that are residential, and we could potentially end up with buffer issues there if we do in fact add something regarding buffers for schools.
I'm taking the common sense approach to this. That is, it just makes sense to put a shooting range, no matter how safe it is constructed, in an area of residential, high residential use. It doesn't make sense when you have the land that's more than readily available to put it elsewhere. I think that communities begin to put gun ranges in strange places when they have no other place to put it. We don't have that problem right now. And it doesn't make sense to me to want to ask for trouble when you don't have to. I think the gun range is an absolutely interesting idea. I think it's long overdue that we have that out here. It's what the community, I think, would really want to have. But I think we ought to be smart about where we put it. Don't ask for trouble. Don't ask for problems. Try to find an isolated spot for it, a spot that actually the hunters, the users would find it interesting to go to, rather than being driving to neighborhoods to get to it. An industrial park seems to be a good spot for it, only because it has similar types of construction around there. But then again, you talk about industrial park where you have outdoor labor, then you have the same feeling of concern. So I'm putting this on a feeling issue, not an intellectual issue. I'm just saying this doesn't feel right. And there's a lot of zoning we look at that we consider because it doesn't feel right. Through sensitivities of our community, or just common sense.
No, I like the barrier idea, and I think that would get us into other. I agree. I appreciate those thoughts for sure. I agree with what you said too. The barrier issue is interesting because then we get into a whole aesthetics, zoning, coding, and where that would be applicable, right? I mean, in residential clarity, it would seem odd to have a walled-in parking lot. So I think as we start plotting the solution, it may just force itself to be in the right spot, just based on feeling as well as architecture. Mr. Chair?
I'd say my gut's telling me similar to a few other comments that EP1, EP2, slam dunk. I'm not sure why we're not considering DC, very commercial zone, in a building downtown. That would seem to work. I'm not sure about the barrier issue. That I think that somewhat depends on the zone it ends up in. I understand what's being expressed. I'm not sure I have that same concern. When it comes to neighborhood business, I'm feeling that that's still, even though it's called a neighborhood business zone, it's still extremely residential, and you know, that doesn't quite feel right in those zones, and a lot of types of businesses don't feel right in that zone. It's not about this particular one.
Either you close or open, or maybe it's a tourist zone, which isn't part of our jurisdiction. But that would be an excellent location for an activity like that.
It's a tough one because we are talking about indoor range. We are talking about we are a rural-oriented city. Sportsman-oriented, fishing, hunting. That all feels very good to me. Less enamored with certain other types of gun activity, but that's not my choice. That's what's within, you know, allowable code. So that works for me. So I think it's just more that natural conflict between what feels like residential land and commercial activities. So I guess the number one point is, why haven't we thought of DC? And why isn't staff interested in DC?
Well, my reasoning why I think it fits best in EP1, EP2, out of all our choices is, if it was in the DC zone and it contained retail, you know, DC to me, what we're trying to accomplish in the downtown core is the heart of our city, which is your restaurant, nightlife, community gathering type of activities. So the nature of it, to me, it would fit really well, like in a more industrial style building. If there was a gun range on the back of the gun shop, would it really have any other effect other than, you know, a retail shop plus an activity inside? No, but as a standalone, it seems to fit better in, unless you were to require a retail component, and I don't know if you want to get into that.
Okay. And these can be independent, right? So we can have an indoor commercial recreational facility that is divorced, you know, as far as, okay, good, because
We originally didn't have the ability to have them looked at separately, and this does that.
Great.
Yeah. Well, but that's an option. I mean, we could always go the direction of requiring a retail component. Correct?
I'd say that's...
We have a similar scenario in the code right now, that we allow a certain percentage of... it's in the neighborhood business, and if you do a business in the neighborhood, that business district that is either heavy warehouse component or manufacturing component, we actually require a retail. We have a company coming in that's going to build small replicator cars and tiny semi-trucks and things. And they're actually going to build it in their facility, but our code requires a retail component. So their office is also going to have now a retail component of these little miniatures you can buy. That was in an effort to fit better into the neighborhood business district for a use that, you know, does work. So you have precedences. But that also gets into...
Which is not what we would want necessarily if it was in EP 1 or 2.
Exactly.
It seems like those 2 points I mentioned, the outdoor range, I don't know if everybody knows about the Snoqualmie Valley Rifle Range. It's down kind of in the sharp turn right after Snoqualmie Falls. Drive right past it if you're not paying attention. But there's a fair membership organization, not where you can just show up and shoot. You have to be a member first. Their count is somewhere around 800-something members. So they're pretty active. And then the other point I guess I'd throw out, it seems to me, particularly including Waze, and one other one in Bellevue, and a couple of others that I just happen to have been in, that there's a huge uptick in the desire for ranges. And almost all of them, in the new scale, have a big retail component. I think it's almost like a survivability piece. You can't really get it for the square footage you're controlling. You can't really derive a much income if you're just renting out ranges on time, but if you're selling related items. So I think the push... It's going to take care of itself if you're thinking, let's get the retail mixed into that.
I would agree with that, too.
And the other side of that, then, going back to keeping these independent, if we were to entertain having a retail component, could that be selected just to the indoor shooting range and not both of these items here, the indoor commercial recreation facility?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if we went that direction, would that make it ubiquitous for both of those?
No,
or would it
you
be
could...
a requirement for both of these?
No, you could separate them.
I just want to make sure that they're clearly delineated because I could see a downtown. I mean, the zoning that we have here makes sense to me for just the indoor rec. Shooting makes sense to me. But if we're making restrictions, I just want to make sure that
yeah,
we don't enforce some of these others.
And, you know, I think it's better to let the industry kind of determine whether a retail component is necessary or not to survive. I think the question I think that you need to answer for the city is if this went in to the EP1 and EP2, what with or without a retail component, it sounds like this I'm hearing, it feels acceptable. Now, if it goes into any other district that has more of a, you know, a pedestrian orientation where we're trying, you know, that's where I think that would be the only part where I would.
Right.
And that's kind of where I am right now. Downtown commercial, I think it's a perception issue. I think it could be done safely. But when I just mentally am going through where could you put it, it would either require major retrofitting of an existing structure that was not constructed for this purpose in the historic district in particular. Or it would place it very close to areas that are frequented by children. And I think that we would see a very strong negative public reaction based on perception.
So can I add, so I'm having dinner last night. I think it was last night, night before. So downtown, sitting in the window, and watched a gentleman walk by with biggest honking sidearm I've seen in quite some time. And my first reaction was, wow, you know, right on. Mm-hmm. And my second reaction was, oh, well, okay, permitted, I'm assuming, use. But yeah, it was a little bit of an arresting first reaction, but that's where... what should I say? I guess I've seen our society moving of late.
Well, and going by the gun shop, I haven't been inside, but just walking by, there's plenty of square footage. I could see a range being retrofitted inside there without having an impact on the outside or historical, you know what I mean, if it's like for handguns or something like that. So in that particular dynamic, it would make sense, but I guess if we don't have it, then
I see a range. That shop is primarily for customers.
Yeah.
Whoever tried out or with the recreation, if you want to hire anyone.
Yeah, that's different.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's an answer.
Would be surprised to know that downrange from the Topol Creek is the Snoqualmie Valley Trail. Big Horseshoe Turn, that trestle is right downrange from the Tobacco Creek. It's always been a problem for me. I ran the lease on that for years when I was with Weyerhaeuser, and the club was about to shut that down because of the concerns that the county had for recreational users on that trail. But I guess they're able to demonstrate that the rounds aren't anywhere going in that direction. But I was talking about Rogue.
Mm-hmm. And that's an outdoor one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
But I never have a thought about going on that trail walking, knowing that that's an active range down there. The rounds don't carry that far. But anyway, that's an obvious appearance of danger. If you actually really knew that there was a firing range just mm-hmm. down. If you go on that horseshoe bend, just stand in the middle of the bend, the range is coming, just coming right at you.
I've been there. I'm familiar with it.
But until it became a trail, no one worried about it. It was a railroad grade.
Well, kind of come back to where you feel like it belongs in town. I do one thing about the downtown. And this is perception, I'm hesitating because it feels more like a feel than it is professional judgment. But to me, downtown's pretty dense, and it's dense with a very strong mixture of we have libraries, churches, schools, a historic downtown. I see this use as something that would want to have kind of a more typical suburban parking lot in front. I don't know if I see it going into a existing building or, you know, so when you start looking at where it could go in the downtown, like you said, once you get past North Benway and Bendigo, you're now trickling into those homes, small homes, churches, and the lot sizes are pretty small. So things are tighter in downtown as we move out of town.
But that would be controlled by the design standards, right? If being permitted in the downtown commercial would not say that it would actually be possible in most locations, right?
Right.
So I'm still intrigued by the notion of EP1, EP2, as we've said, slam dunk. Downtown commercial, if there was a retail component, seems like that can work. I guess in one sense it takes me back to some of the thinking around tattoo parlors and feeling that I'm not here to judge whether or not you should have a tattoo. It's what is our society telling us about that activity, and is it licensed and governed in a way that we feel okay about, and therefore, if it's a retail-oriented business, why shouldn't it be there? And so, I'm just intrigued with the notion that if we are we're in a new era now, or maybe returning to an era, where being licensed to carry a sidearm or a concealed weapon is an acceptable activity in an area, why would we not promote as much as allow a well managed and regulated shooting range where people would actually be getting schooled and taught in how to use these weapons appropriately? They should go together. You know, kind of again, my view of the gentleman walking down the street. I need to be comfortable seeing that firearm. Why wouldn't I be comfortable with the notion that there's a safe indoor range where that gentleman might be going to shoot that firearm? So, you know, but within that, it does, again, it feels like, to staff's point, downtown is intended to be retail. So that's where it kind of drives me to the retail component.
And so different than tattoo parlors, I kind of look at it that it will attract a little more traffic and volume, and so it doesn't fit neatly in a neighborhood business as a tattoo parlor would. So I guess that would be the one distinction I would want to make, is this type of business might be a little more high volume.
I think we're desperately trying to get the downtown core back into a viable business core, and I think that it's just common sense. Rob, just come to grips with the reality that when you're trying to attract customers, you don't want to be saddled with the probability to chase them away because of the feeling about a gun range right next to your coffee shop. It just doesn't seem to make sense.
It may well not.
You know, and so we need to be sensitive to that and maybe show a little understanding of that by not saying, well, we can dissolve it, but will they come? I mean, I don't think it seems reasonable to try not to allow it, because then you're going to have all these shop owners and potential shop owners looking at that, realizing, well, at some point I might have a gun range owner somewhere else. That doesn't seem to have, seems to be a manufactured problem. You don't need to have one.
I don't know. Now listening to the conversation, hearing there's 800 and some odd members, I'm seeing downtown traffic increasing. More and more people coming to it, if that was the hypothetical scenario. Now we have a presence actually happening downtown. So it could be a type of an attraction to get people to go through the downtown corridor. So maybe those other shop owners would be like, oh, there's a potential for business here, because now we actually have people here other than the random Sunday cyclists and whatever events we decide to throw. So I kind of lean in. Seeing it from that angle, you know, I hear what you're saying. I totally respect it. And I don't disagree with it. I just looking at it from more common perspective.
Well, and you know, that actually brings back the question to my mind as to what do you want to attract to your downtown? The tourists that will be definitely of the gun ranges won't attract the families. They'll attract adults. Independent, you think?
No, I
don't.
Shoot your eye out, kid. Are you kidding me?
Well, maybe. Okay, I don't go to them, so that's all right. Maybe they do bring kids in.
You know, I'm again, well, it's back to the judgment thing. I also don't ski, and I love that we have this very active ski shop downtown, but, you know, I'm not a skier. I'm not. It's just, am I judging the sportsman versus the skier?
Well, I would give having an incidental gun range with a retail, primarily retail situation. But what we're talking about, not what we're talking about, not having something that specifically to generate a large volume of traffic.
Yeah.
So it's something to test fire a weapon, or to show someone who is a customer, give them an opportunity to fire a gun. That I could get being potentially in downtown commercial.
Well, I guess what I'm driving at is within what's currently permitted, though, that wouldn't be allowed, correct?
No, if a gun shop, I mean, I don't have an attorney sitting here, but if I had, this is what I think the answer is. If your gun shop is predominantly retail and you have a range or a corridor or what have you that you give clients an opportunity to test the gun, the main purpose of that facility is the retail component, and you're just giving somebody the opportunity to try the.
So you're saying within current code that would.
Yeah, I think that's ancillary to the purpose of buying a gun. Now, if they opened it up where you had an hour slot that you can come in and shoot your own gun and rent a gun, well, no, rent maybe.
What about classroom? Training, classing, classroom.
I mean, because I started thinking about the education, and then I think about my drive-in. I go by our senior museum center, and I see images from the 1940s of some sad nurse sitting there, and it's like, whoa, what's happening here? What's driving that traffic? Then we get to the Visitors Bureau, and it's old-timey pictures of 100 and some odd years ago that we're embracing. So to me, it's almost kind of going in hand with that. Plus, we have a gun shop. We have a huge generator or whatever that facility is, and then we have an antique shop that is an antique in and of itself. So when I think of what's actually here and now, as well, it kind of fits into the theme that we're presenting to anybody that wants to come through.
But the things you just pointed out aren't our, you know, I mean, because there are other parts of our town that are really something you would highlight. The historic theater that's got a marquee that looks amazing. You got Boxley's Jazz Club. That's one of the, you know, renowned jazz clubs. So if the gun range to you associates your mind with those other elements, then I don't know if that's what you want
to. Well, to me, I don't see this, is contiguous the right word, theme happening. I see a lot of outdoor recreational facility is kind of the spirit of what our community is, exactly to your point. And we have cycling, fishing, hunting, skiing, anything you want to do outdoors is here. So it kind of makes sense within the spirit there. But if somebody wants to own a gun shop downtown like somebody has, and they develop and they put in their own shooting range and they can already do that, then that's fine. But I'm kind of getting more and more open to funding.
Here's why I'm a no on the downtown core. Is somebody that owns a gun and has been to ranges, I've never seen one located by bar or restaurants. Maybe that's for a reason. I don't see that they work hand in hand. While it's safe in your car and you go in and have a few and your judgment is not as clear and concise about how you were so diligent about putting it in the case and locking it when you left the club, you know, what's to say that, you know, the guy you had an argument with doesn't go so favorably?
I think that could already happen.
All these things we're talking about, like, I thought the same thing Jim thought, like, how can we get, like, some kind of barrier so if it's by a school or there's pedestrians, there's misfires, it won't have an impact. Mm-hmm. But I didn't find any real facts or incidents of that occurring. So I don't want to just require something so costly that isn't a factual part of our society. Like, you have to measure the risk with...
they can rent space on those walls for advertising.
Yeah. No, our time code
wouldn't allow. The other thing that changes, just as a point of fact, I'll just put it that way, there is no place in the downtown core where you can put a 50-yard firing range.
Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm.
So you're only talking about handguns here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So handguns are small, and they go into people's wherever they put them. And some people show them, some people don't. So the retail part of this, it's kind of, to me, it's almost a, if you allow the retail function of sales, whether it's just ammunition or just weapons, you kind of need to go down the road of saying, hey, this is also in a 25-yard distance. I'm going to put in a training relationship to the gun purchase so that Johnny and Sally don't leave here with a firearm that they haven't really practiced with. That fits completely with the retail piece of the puzzle to me. And if it's not like a storefront, you know, any more than the retail of the everything else they're selling, I totally think it goes along with the idea that if we're going to allow the sales of the weapons in the first place, we should encourage the training and the use and the function of it.
That's the biggest use at the total. That's all in NRA training down there. They have an enormously successful young child program down there. That's what they pay in the bill.
So we've been I didn't mean to cut you off, but we've been talking a lot about downtown core, and there's been some great points and great views, but I don't see anybody so passionately that we want it there. How about interchange commercial? What would be wrong with that? I don't find a negative part to put it in interchange commercial. We have very few places where that could go, but it's adjacent to business. For commercial activity, it's not normally buffering retail, right? Or residential.
There's some, but not. No, you're right.
There's none.
So, whether you'd like to see the bait and tackle shop or the Cabela's or the.
Yeah.
Right.
It would make sense actually with the what we're talking about with the potential for new traffic coming in when they finish.
Well, that's a heavily retailer area, so the staff think that there would be a conflict in that regard.
No, because it's also at 34, and there's quite a bit of undeveloped IC out there.
Yep.
So, no.
And no housing.
Right.
Do you want to form a motion?
Can I run that back to you? What I think you just said, or add it to you? I'll just, my opinion, put it this way. So I'm thinking that it should be someone wants to do it and they have the property or they lease it or whatever they do. There shouldn't be a hurdle, provided they're not in a residential zone, whether that's high, low, cottage, whatever. If it's a residential zone, I would just kind of off the cuff say, nah, you're going to have to go through hoops to even get it to listen to that. But all the other zones, if we talk about the neighbor concept, where they don't want to hear the crack, pop, bang at whatever time of the day, and if they're
providing the security that the neighborhood or the area around it, even if it's an industrial park, would want to have. I can imagine the guys at Genie coming and going, even that far out, if they knew that there's a firing range right next door and people are coming in and out with rifles all the time, they might be looking as they come out with their lunchbox. So let's create a buffer for them to feel like it's not an issue. So I don't know what else to say, but residential zones, the only thing I would say is off limits.
I hear you. I didn't think interchange mixed use, which is to buffer residential, makes sense because it is that buffering zone up next to it. And so you kind of create that conflict. Downtown core, I kind of have a no sense because just mixing with that nightlife and art and walkability and what you want to do with the plaza concept, you know, while it's convenient, I don't see that is the compatible draw to that space.
I am. No library. So focused on bringing every single activity that we contract into the core. I mean, is there something valuable about locating certain uses farther out and people in their day in town? We have hotels in town, we have places for them to stay. So they venture out, even if it's not in the city, they venture out, take care of their use, bike riders. What do? They congregate in town for their overnight stay. But they have their activity for their way than the downtown core. That's not essential. It's not important. These firing ranges traditionally are located outside city limits, and they get sucked up by the growth of the city going out towards them. They just can't move. And eventually they find themselves having to shut down and move further out because just the nature of their business. I think an indoor range, if we ever allow big box stores to come into this area, would be a great type of location for that kind of a use. It'd be a high traffic use and be in a corridor that has a lot of noise tolerance. So any kind of noise perceptions would be gobbled up by that idea. But
Cabela's.
I mean, I think that would be a natural thing. But when you get a firing range, that's going to be at least a 30 or 40 acre proposition to put up. An outdoor range I'm talking about, which is where a lot of the interest is. Pistol ranges are interesting.
Well, that would be outside of city limits.
Yeah.
That's just a given. So yeah. I think we need to stay focused on the indoor shooting.
So I'm saying that if we have a shooting, we have an enthusiastic public for a range, we can work as the city to encourage people to develop a range on behalf of the city outside the city limits. We can still be talking about that, doesn't happen. We can't talk about it. But we're not considering siting an outdoor range. But the idea about having an indoor range next to an outdoor range is a very good possibility, too, for seasonal use.
Fantastic. Mr. Chair, I'm prepared to make a motion. So, respecting Jim's comments about buffers, I think falls more into performance standards. But to move us forward, I would move that in terms of permitted uses for the table under 2.23A for shooting ranges, that P for permitted uses be allowed in EP1, EP2, and IC.
Friendly amendment.
Okay, I need a second.
Second. Okay, so it's a motion by Rob and a second by Brendan. Do you want to speak to your motion first?
Well, I've listened to the conversation back and forth. I think, to me, that's basically what I was hearing, is that there's a lot of logic to allowing it in our more commercial zones. And IC seems to fit within that notion. And I didn't hear much comfort for anything that has a fairly residential use, and so that's why I'm falling where it is.
Quick clarification, one zone that you did mention was the USOD, and the staff had left that off of the
My motion was not to include USOD.
Okay.
Would you make her include DC? With the proviso that I just mentioned, you're not going to have a rifle range there.
Is that your friendly amendment?
Yep.
No, thank you. No, okay. I'll turn that down.
Okay. Anybody else wish to speak?
I support Mark. Robs.
I may need to change my name.
Robs. Motion and the fact that it's common sense. And it does get down hard. We have like light exteriors, like uses. There's lots of ways to provide protection, some protection from an activity that's commonly used but misunderstood. And I think that the e-zones and the passive zone makes a lot of sense and restrict them away from the other zones is even better.
Okay. So, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion carries.
You can figure out the
I just have to add it in later.
Performance standards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, what's this?
So we need to have a commercial on this. Or we have to make the motion ranges?
Actually, a question, maybe this is, I'm sure it's the opening letter. Talks about this docket request from October.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that's 2014.
Correct.
Might have been the night you missed.
And then the second bullet paragraph, I'm just trying to read this and wondering if it would have changed anything. So the second paragraph, starting with the Second Amendment, the second line of that. Table permitted and conditional uses or use and allowed that uses only within EP1 and EP2. So this amendment is fitted.
We're going to have to update this. Yeah.
Okay.
So based on what you guys just gave us direction for, we'll update this and bring it back to you at the next meeting for a final recommendation on the topic.
Yep. And then the SEPA.
Yep.
We've gone through that already and nobody said anything?
It was correct. It was published with the notice for the public hearing at the same time, and there have been no comments on it.
That's surprising, correct. Maybe?
No.
Sorry, I made some notes on this as I went through. Is it important to talk about this noise issue? Are we going to come back to this when you talked about the next
time about performance?
Yeah, I'm looking at performance standards. You've got listed here already.
No, give us any input, because we'd like to come back with the final document next meeting.
The biggest piece, I think, for the average person who has nothing to do with guns is going to be the sound. If they can hear it from wherever they are, and it may not be loud, but the knowledge of it being gunfire perks everybody up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure that if 50 dB is the right number. I don't know if it's less than that.
Okay.
50 dB, supposedly, like you and I are talking right now. But if we were sitting still and I heard a crack next door, I'd be paying attention differently.
Like a lawnmower or a leaf blower.
It's just the... Yeah, it's like you can go back and sleep if you know the guy's using a lawnmower.
No, we haven't. Yeah, I don't. Right? I actually...
If it's the same level of sound and it's a crack and it's a rifle shot, you're like, wait a minute. So that's what I'm saying. Kind of the DVD piece may not be quiet enough.
Okay.
We'll get used to the sounds. Remember all the...
That's all coming away. People are just used to it. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. I could handle
being
in a flight path.
Quiet suburb conversation at home.
It was loud.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but if it was
large
a
electrical transformer at 100 feet.
And I wasn't totally comfortable with it, then that's different than all the other uses. So I'm saying
this isn't North Bend.
Maybe they live in next to me.
I know, but just...
But if we as planners have said, hey, you're going to go down to 30 dB, man, to put it there.
Yeah. So that would be more of a business concern than like a neighboring business. Yeah.
50 dB is defined as quiet suburb conversation at home or a large electrical transformer at 100 feet. And when speaking to firing ranges, it sounds like the noise that you'll hear from outside, you can hear it in the parking lot, and it sounds like somebody's dropping a book.
Yep.
Is about the level of noise.
Right. And I'm still making the same point.
It's right, different just to clarify.
Sound. And I think about the school thing, you know, it's nap time at the nursery school, you know, and they're three blocks away, but it's not, the book gets dropped. It's a different kind of, it's a disquieting.
And
Well, in the residential district, I mean, in the residential district, we have a noise ordinance on the books for at 55. Business next to residential is 57, and residential next to industrial is 60. So this falls below residential to business by 7 in our current code. If you wanted to go to, I mean, truthfully, the better, you always want your code to be consistent across the board to all uses. So one way to handle this is just to rely on the noise ordinance you have on the books and not do something specific here. But if you felt the need to do something specific, that's why we offered up an opportunity for you to drop it even lower and be a little more tight on your regs.
And that's exponential, or maybe that's not the right word, but 50, the difference between 50 and 60, if I'm not mistaken, is 100 times, right?
60 is defined as a conversation in restaurant, office, background music, or air conditioning unit at 100.
You're asking, is it logarithmic versus?
10 times for every 10 decibels.
Okay. So anyway, I get the conversation is at 50 dB, mm-hmm. and you and I are doing that right now. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to come back to it if there's an opportunity, because I'm pretty clear in my head that there's a big difference in the conversation.
What would we come back to? What would we be coming back? I mean, it is the time.
What is your preference? Yeah,
I'm hesitating only because I don't know what 40 sounds like, or 35. And is that, I mean, you mentioned early on, in fact, Suquamish's done that. Whatever they've done, you can be standing in the parking lot and you don't hear anything. They mm-hmm. managed to go probably to close to zero.
What's the noise level of, Rennie Rock? What is that noise level?
Oh, I would think that's actually up in the, industrial to industrial. I mean, an industrial can, you know, is around a 70. I kind of think that can be up in the 70,
yeah,
but I don't.
Do. And it's continuous, isn't it? And yeah. Is there a distinction between incidental noise and continuous noise?
I guess, Jim, I get where you're going and what you're saying, but I'm feeling that because of the if the zones that you've chosen prevail, then I'm feeling pretty comfortable with the dBs that are already in code. Because
I'm
talking about a commercial area.
Yeah, I get that. And I don't know what's involved, but I know that if you can get the sound concept to go away, then your adjacent property owners are going to have less interest in carrying.
Right.
And it's not even about the volume. It's just a crack that they know what it is.
How thick do the walls have to be to stop the bullet?
There's probably
may I make a recommendation?
Probably some better way to evaluate that.
Because Rob, I think, just pointed out something that I feel like I'm hearing between everybody, but you guys have chose three districts that really do not have a lot of residents living nearby, but there will be a few because there's some, you know, every district has a boundary. So the way this reads is basically it says that the noise shall not exceed 50 dB as measured at the property line to residential properties. Period, and then leave the commercial out and rely on your own decimal levels here. So the only place you're upping the game for a higher standard on noise is anytime you would have this use next to a residential area, which could happen.
You know, what about just a noise in terms of the industrial site? Is it possible to regulate the noise makers from the center out, so the higher noisemakers would be allowed to locate in the center of the zone property and work its way out? Less like you see in cities with elevated landscapes, they have the taller buildings in the center with the low shorter ones out. Can you regulate that kind of situation?
It would be difficult because, you know, investment is driven by a number of different things. And but you're also not just talking about trying to protect the noise for residences, but, you know, say you center something in the middle that's really loud, And the guy next to it runs kind of a medium-level shop, but has to sit there, you know, and listen to. In the end, what we have is a standard that really actually tries to get a happy medium across the board citywide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's say, to use your example of the model building, this kind of retail frontage. He's an EP somewhere?
He is actually in neighborhood business, and everything's indoors. And there's no noise, the impact on noise is almost
so there's a, let's say there's, I can't think of somebody, but they've got, they're an EP1 and they're an established business, and the firing range comes in next door to them. I haven't heard, they are protected from the sound.
So well, I guess for me, but to me it goes back to the same thing. I don't want to judge whether this noise is worse than that noise. I mean, I may object to the grinding of gravel or the... what I hate is that backup noise that you get out of every modern commercial vehicle, right?
Yeah.
You know,
garbage truck.
So I feel pretty comfortable with the across the board. It's here's the dB level, and whether you're Genie or gravel grinding or the pop of the weapon, that's the standard you have to meet. It's not for me to judge whether that pop is more irritating to me than another.
Would you agree that most folks in our city would acknowledge that crack pop sound would be less desirable than the hum of a
generator? No, I don't think I could agree with that. I don't know that is. All I could say would be that for me, I think pretty quickly I would adjust to that pop more than I would to the grating sound of commercial vehicle backup noise.
Which is louder than 50 dB.
I can only speak for me.
Jim, for me, I'm wondering why it's measured at the property line,
right,
and why residential isn't lower to 14 decibels. And that's where I'm, you know, kind of looking at is why do we, if we have 120 by, I don't know, 85 or 100 feet, so it's 100 feet away.
Well, because that's where the rights are involved, right? It's the imposition into my property, whether it be sound or light or other, right?
So
it's not about the noise that you're making within your own home. It's the amount of noise that's traveling from your home to mine.
I hear you, and I agree. And so what then are we saying... that level 55 is acceptable to transfer into your space. And that's going to be louder than rain. I don't know.
I always come back to the same thing. If I'm there and this guy, gal, whatever business moves in next to me, I'm not going to be bothered by, to use these same stories, if there's a guy's playing his television at 50 dB 24/7 and there's sounds changing, but it's there. Okay, I got that. But if every other Tuesday between 3 and 2 o'clock or 3 and 10 o'clock, there's an occasional pop, bang, different thing going on, it's just different. Different energy sitting at my table or whatever I'm doing.
You have a recording studio. They bring bands all the time. They're playing loud music. They're recording 80, you know, whatever. How much is permeating through that plus the vibration of the bass?
Well, this is a short off topic, a tad, but it's funny. So, you know, Doothy, it goes back to the comparison of noise and what people's perspectives are. So you guys are aware of the Doothy Hill Mountain Bike Park, right? So there's this mountain bike park up on Doothy Hill. It's very popular. It's King County Park, and it attracts a large amount of people to do this activity, and if you go on one trail, there's actually a sign that says, please be quiet, do not disturb the neighbor, because the city of Sammamish actually had a person who complained that the sound of the children playing, laughing, and participating in mountain biking was too loud. They did it, you know, they kind of did a decimal thing, and so, yeah, the decision was we need to put up a sign to keep the sound down. So in the end, I think what that kind of says to me, it kind of comes back to what Rob was saying, is it doesn't matter what the use is. If it triggers the decimal reading, you have to quiet it down. And the perspective, one guy, he thought kids laughing was too much versus the beeping of a, you know. And so I think where you're really, where you come back to is, do you feel your decimal levels in the code are adequate for this use, or do you want to be more stringent in this? And just based on your discussion, I'm kind of hearing you want to treat all the uses similarly in within the city.
Yes.
Okay.
Until I go to a public meeting, I'm surprised we haven't had any more public, and they will all tell you that they hear a gunshot differently than all these other sounds.
So I don't think we're going to get anywhere. I'll make a motion, or let's move on.
I don't know what the motion is, because I don't know where the magic number would be. I'm just going to say that I'll leave it out here that we need to review whether 50 dB is quiet enough for a rifle range.
Well, I think maybe that you could give us consensus on what you feel on that, because we need to come back with.
It's a good discussion, because in my memory, no one discussed the noise levels of the bands out there at the casino until it was too late. So you should be thinking about it, but it does seem to be a little
50
bit
is what?
Tedious.
How do we describe 50? 40 is described as birds, the sound of birds. Library and bird calls.
Irritating noise at 5 o'clock.
Which is why you need 12 gauges.
And lower.
Or a couple cats. Which is fine.
And 50 is conversation at a home.
That irritates me too.
I'd be curious if there's any information out there about what, when they've done all of the necessary walls, etc., what is the usual decibel range that you hear outside of one of these indoor ranges? There's got to be some information about that.
Well, I'm
sure we may be talking about a moot point.
Yeah.
It may be because of the thickness of the walls and the additional protective features that it's going to be well below that.
Can you give me a 30? Is there a 30 there somewhere? Yeah.
She's getting back to the...
Oh, sorry. I don't want to belabor that.
Well, you know, I'm coming.
I'm going to vote to ban the playground behind my house, because those kids can get pretty loud.
Yes, they can. Especially when they bang on the metal set.
Yeah.
Randomly. And you can't control it.
I think it affects my chickens and their egg laying. So I just don't think it's a good thing.
Now, that will be the thing that made the press right there.
I mean, based on the description that 50 is conversation within the home, that seems like a comfortable.
Well, that just means you can comfortably hear it. That's what I think. That's loud enough that I can comfortably hear it.
So,
on the property line, not inside your house, right?
So what staff needs here, guys, is some kind of a feeling. So you need to
all right,
let Jim know.
So here's the research item. Is it feasible, reasonably, however you want to rephrase what I'm asking you, to go to 20 dB and still have a functioning firing range?
You could go to zero, but and require everything to be so muffled that.
Yep.
But the question I would ask is, this is the only use in your entire city that is being held to the standard. So why? What's the reason? Is it different than the rock grinding?
Well, that's what Jim was saying. Yeah. To him, it is different. I'm saying to me, it's not different. And that's what I'm trying to get out of the other four here.
Oh, I don't think it's different.
Is it something different or not? And if there's not support, let's move on.
Yeah.
Leave this poor guy. Let's suffer him.
He's already owes us a
round. Because when I think about it, I think about a conversation on the property line, and then my business is going to be 8 to 10 feet away from that property line with my own insulation and my own thing. So odds are I'm probably not going to hear the conversation happening outside my walls. So I think 50 makes sense now, knowing that 50 is that sound.
Stand for our ways to judge for ourselves.
And I absolutely understand and respect what you're saying about the difference in sound. I've enjoyed the conversation. If I don't have a motion, let's move on.
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
Staff, please report back about Snoqualmie PD, since that's a reference that's already been mentioned. It's dead quiet.
Emotion.
Getting there. I'm trying to make it easy to accomplish.
Okay.
Wade's, the other gun range, and I know personally, it's literally dead quiet. They can be firing off they want in there, and you can't hear it even in the lobby. So there is somebody who's figured it out, and I'm going to use those two references. So I'll ask by this motion that staff gather the data that relates to those two facilities.
What it, and the data is, what
what's,
is
what's
like,
their DB? What are they putting out?
That's a property line?
Yep.
Or outside the door.
Well, we will take our DB reader on a field trip. And we will also...
You can download that.
Is it a phone call, though? I mean, can't they tell you what criteria they had to meet?
No, they can't. No, so call me. Nobody there was around for the construction still that has any idea about it, and nobody at Wade is willing to talk about it because, especially because we're so close in proximity, the potential that we would be drawing business away from them.
They're a little not sharing with them.
They've got a big coverage, I understand.
And they also did just get in trouble, so they're a little hesitant to talk to anyone about anything.
So it doesn't sound to me like we need a motion to get us to request staff to do to provide the research.
But I think kind of we already...
You got it.
We already know that the only way we're going to be able to do that is to walk over there with our own DB reader.
So quality is going to range on the ground.
It's a daylight basement style.
Yeah, basement style is that's a big help.
Yeah.
Right. Well, there was another comment that you had said about the 55, omitting the last part of that sentence, 55 to commercial. So, because I'm unclear, are we keeping it as is, or is it just 50 flat? Is the objective?
50 is a more stringent standard when it's next to residential, and that's what I was hearing you guys most concerned with. So my thought was, if you want to be more stringent when it is located next to residential, then we go with 50. Let the existing code regulate commercial to commercial.
And what is the existing code?
50.
55 was printed here, or 60?
No, it's 57 commercial to commercial. Business, no, sorry, business to business is 60.
60, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So then I'm crossing this one off.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, so, I'm sorry, did I just hear you got it 60 where they might most likely put this thing?
If it went out, you know, in the IC zone or in the EP1 or EP2, where you don't have residents next door,
right,
it could be 60 next to another gas station, for example.
Can I just interrupt?
Yeah.
I'm on the Purdue EDU website, and I don't know if you guys are.
It's quick.
Yeah.
These areas are going to be along the I-90 freeway. A passenger car at 65 miles per hour is 70 decibels. So if they're at 60, the surrounding noise is going to be even louder than what we're requiring.
Yeah, I really actually think you don't need to worry about the decibel.
Yeah. And so it helped me to look at this chart to really understand what the various noise levels are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think gunfire is in the 90 range, like right there in front of you for a lot of calibers.
I mean, even at the 60 level, we're already muting it more than what we're hearing off the freeway. So, my window, sleeping at night, I hear the freeway all night long, but...
I don't hear it.
Yeah, it kind of blends in. I dream of it as
the river,
bigger river.
The river's louder than the freeway.
Really? I'm right on the river. I hear the freeway all night.
All
right. That's the
ocean. Okay.
Moving on?
Yes. Item number 5, land use element. Do we really have a public hearing schedule?
We did, and we don't have anybody here.
What would you be holding a public hearing on since the last I knew you're still putting...
It was published, and once it's published, we don't usually pull it back. And that being said, it's also very helpful to get comment before we finalize, so we can actually get
a
recommendation.
So are you going to track changes in the doc that was emailed?
We have decided basically not to worry so much about track changes and to look at these almost like new documents, because you have made...
I mean, what was the document that was sent? I mean, it had this comments in there. Is that, I'm thinking of a different document? Because the one that I pulled off email, I think was the last email, had track change. So I went through and started making notes, but knowing that we had the public hearing and that we'd probably revisit that, but Is that how it was presented? Was with the comments that said, you know, need
to the public? It was presented, or is that how it was presented?
Well, in the email, there were sections where it said, need to move this here, need to add this image there.
Okay.
Maybe I'm not looking at the most recent email, but
There's a lot of versions, so I'm not certain which one that I sent out. So
well,
it could be that I
you sent two, though. You sent a clean version and a red line.
You were interested in what the public saw?
Well, knowing the email I opened, I saw edits that still needed to be made and conversations that needed to be had.
Okay.
Knowing that there was a public hearing, I was thinking, is this point of discussion for the public, or it just seemed odd to me, so maybe I just looked.
No, I'm not doubting that. But what was posted online, which is what's available to the public, was the clean version that you received in your packet two meetings ago. So the one that you have in front of you was the clean version, which was what was available to the public online.
So what was sent on March 6th?
We'd have to go back to March 6th and look at that. Yeah, but what is your question regarding?
Well, I mean, it just had changes that looked like they needed to be made.
We have a version that is totally redlined, and we try to keep you guys up to speed on that, but that's really hard to read. So what we're doing is we're basically pretty much revamping these. So when you're reading these, you definitely want to read them as a new document. If you want to go back and reference what changes were made, that's why that part is.
And I don't remember which one I sent out, but I know at one point I sent out one that said if you want to look at the red line edits, look at them, but you can, and here's how to turn off the track changes, just so you could see where they had been made.
That was probably the most recent transmittal. So my question to staff regarding this is, at the last meeting we were discussing that there was a lot of data crunching that had to be completed. And a lot of table updating that had to be done. And that's what I believe that we were waiting on before we took another action. So that's why I'm not sure what we were going to try and accomplish tonight, particularly what we would hold a public hearing on lacking those updated tables. That's where I'm confused.
What we were trying to do is once you get the tables, you review the tables, the numbers, and we're done. So the last discussion we had is you guys were deciding whether you wanted to call out each neighborhood and whether that was important. You concluded it was important. So what we're actually trying to do is keep you inching through the document, because if we just share the final product and all 58 pages of it, it's going to feel much more overwhelming than getting your input along the way. What I actually felt like we were going to come tonight with was basically a very short discussion. Nothing's changed since your last meeting. What we heard from your last meeting was the discussion on the neighborhoods. We ended up feeling like we want to keep the neighborhoods in there. You guys did create a new zone called the constrained residential. So what we're going to do is create a new categories and describe that in here. That will be the only remaining change to this part of it, and then you'll get all the stats at the next meeting for hopefully your final review of the document as a total
piece. Maybe I'm fuzzy, but it sounds like we'd be having a public hearing on a document that's not complete.
You have had about five public hearings over the last year and a half on this piece, and the reason we want to get people's input along the way is so we don't get it the last night, and then all of a sudden we're into another year of work because we're now realizing what the community really wants to see. So we're trying to engage people along the way so nobody has any opportunity to say they didn't get invited along for the ride.
So, Mr. Chair, item 5 on here is a public hearing.
Yes.
So would it be wise to open and close the public hearing if no one? Okay.
About to do that. Yeah, so at this point, item number 5 is the land use element public hearing, and we'll go ahead and open that. And is there anybody from the public who wishes to speak on the land use element? Hearing none, I will go ahead and close the public hearing. And we can move on to item number 6.
As far as deliberation on land use, I don't know, did anybody have any changes or questions that they had that they wanted to get addressed before I started?
I thought Brendan promised that he was going to rewrite most of the text sections on his airplane trips. I know that my
company had other plans for me.
My comments are reserved until I see the tables.
Yeah, I'm like the with you. I need to see.
But you go, Johnny.
All right, so on page 2, under section C, land use, the third paragraph. Development constraints such as aquifer recharge areas, river streams, floodplains, wetlands, steep slopes, and geologically unstable soil define the existing development limits. I understand constrained residential is a new zone, but how do we inform the public clearly in our mapping where these areas are in that we are doing those constraints that this document says we are? I guess is my first question. I don't see it as an overlay, and I don't see it as a zone. So,
you mean the development constraints that are listed there?
Yeah.
So in your critical areas element, you have all of the maps related to steep slopes and what have you. So you do have, the document contains all of that information in different components.
So I guess my question, I don't know if it's to the commission, do we clearly identify and place the growth, you know, outside these areas that we, you know, want to through a zone, or is this mapping, you know, clear enough?
Well, let me jump in.
Do you understand what
yeah. Okay, so our maps are all basically best available information. We haven't taken any survey level type, whether, you know, even if we, you know, except under the floodplains, probably our most solid. So when a development comes in, we require them to do a critical area study, which would include wetlands, steep slopes, this, that, and that. And then what happens is your critical area ordinance governs where you can build, what your setbacks are from these critical...
from the findings.
Yeah, so like if it's the river, you have to follow the river buffer regularly. If it's a steep slope, you have to do X, Y, and Z. So our code actually... is the, you know, we find wetlands on properties we think didn't have a wetland. And then all of a sudden, boom, there's a buffer and everything's triggered.
It's a tricky slope because, you know, you get into those questions of, you know, the right to develop and too many restrictions on property. But even just on critical aquifer recharge areas, can we have something that talks about a limitation on permeable surfaces over a set acre, you know, square footage, anything like that, where do we identify it and how do we place it in our map?
So with that one, we have it. I'll just have to bring that information to you because the comp plan shows a map, which is your CARA, your critical aquifer recharge area, and then our code has some language with what is permitted.
What I'm getting to is that there's layers and layers, and how can we make it simple so you look at something and you know, is there a way?
And I guess what I'm saying is, if you're going to develop in North Bend, you would come in, we can hand you the maps that we have available, but we're still going to ask for that information to be provided by, like, a licensed geotech or what have you.
Well, if I can just interject, because sure. It kind of fits in this, and I apologize if I missed this before I came on to the commission. Where are we in terms of determining landslide risk and the impact within the city and these areas? I know King County completed their rather extensive study here recently, and it's really interesting if you go onto the IMAP, by the way, and you see their maps for our area and then the maps from North Bend, and so Kwame, where all of a sudden
it's because we get wiped down.
you know? So I was curious where we stand on anything. I'm assuming that comes into play a little bit when you're looking at having them look at the steep slopes, but do we
scroll through? We have a critical
area element erosion and debris flow hazards map.
There's a number of them. I don't have the critical area or element in front of me, but we do have landslide hazard areas shown. We do use the county information as our baseline information.
Okay.
But again, when somebody comes in to develop, it's their responsibility to show they comply with the code, and by showing you comply with the code is to analyze the soils, provide a soils analysis, a traffic analysis, the whole bit, so we can evaluate the necessary mitigation that needs to be required, or the portions of the code that need to be triggered and complied with.
How far above and beyond other neighboring communities are we in that practice?
It's a pretty standard practice. Like our buffers.
So any developer builder is going to come here and go, oh, okay, yeah. I need to jump through these hoops.
Right, and we're pretty streamlined. Actually, we're probably one of the quickest cities.
So outside you for a minute.
Maybe. I think it was county. You're talking about.
No. It's city. It's taking forever.
Well, maybe. But if it's in the county.
Fast on anything, I don't think so.
Especially in a toll gate. Well, this map came out in one of our packets, but I don't remember.
Which map do you have in your hand?
Critical area element erosion and debris flow hazards map.
Mm-hmm. That would be in your critical area ordinance or element, which you did already review and recommend.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm saying that's where I got from our packet. But you should have a last revised date.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on. Anybody else? Before I get to my next. I'm going to go to page 15 of 32. It's section E, land use and zoning designations. We talk about residential, employment park, and downtown commercial. I think it would be helpful for the reader to have some kind of a table or our codes designated by each one of these, so that way when you're looking at the zoning map and you see IC or LDR, you know what one it relates to.
Is there a reference to the appendix?
Page 15.
Thank you. Another guy's right one, because there is a reference to the appendix.
Of a 32 page.
I prefer it to be readily
available for the.
Well, but I hear that point, but if we're trying to concentrate the narrative on that little block and we start adding in. So, am I looking at the right section here? It says appendix 10.1. I could be looking at the wrong paragraph, but when I see the citation for appendix 10.1, then I know, hey, I should flip that page out, and if I got a 32 page doc, I'll take it up, I'll unstaple it. Hold it next to me because I'm looking at that. But if we add a table in here, it's going to start breaking up. And then where would we really stop?
I don't know what appendix 10.1 is. It's not part of the
I'll say somewhat different. Are we not moving to a wiki-style online document? So it's really about how you navigate on that is what your focus should be.
I'm not saying where it should be. I'm just saying it's not there. And so some way we have to relate the text that's here describing our zones to the codes that we have on our map. That's all.
That I agree.
Moving on. Okay. We talked about the flood zones and the cars. Okay, then we come to the tables. So I'm going to stop there.
It's got a small thing. Some of these subsections. Is there any way, maybe it's just a comment, anything that we should worry about, bold them? There are things like, residential downtown. I get subsection being italicized, depending on whatever writing style you want for, but yeah, that can
What page are you looking at?
Right now, I thumbed to really quickly, page 10, second paragraph, residential downtown. There's a bunch of these little subsections that are just lost. I know the italicized technically calls it out, but maybe we could bold those. Because when I was looking for neighborhood sections, I was like, oh, where's it at? Where's it at? When I go through.
I would want whatever we would do in that regard to be consistent throughout the document.
Exactly.
Not just this chapter. So if staff's already got a hierarchy set up, maybe we should be reviewing the hierarchy across the board.
That's a good call. Because I just happened to notice it on this section for some reason.
Well, I'd have to go and look at what we have set up for that.
I'll bet you we got 10 chapters, I bet we got at least 5 different hierarchies.
I don't know if we have 5 or 1, but I do know that we are if you recall, Megan set forth that really nice system, that format. We don't give you that format in this, so you will get the final format, will be in the nice reader version. We can look at those things and make improvements and make sure everything's consistent.
Well, that's, I think, what I'm suggesting is let's make sure maybe it's we're so distant from that that we may need to revisit just
so
that
we're comfortable
that
it's getting
there.
Yeah, problem.
Are you suggesting that Lynn doesn't know how to pull up Megan's work?
No, Lynn's totally taken on Lynn has now taken on Megan's and taken it to the next level for, what was the last one that you did with the, was it the critical areas?
For the InDesign?
Yeah.
I put the housing and the utilities.
Housing and utilities. So she takes what you guys do, and then we go back and we format it to make it look awesome. So the question you have is this bold or italics in that version? I have to look at it. But what we can do is make sure we spend some time and make sure. I mean, we do have some things we're improving along the way. Like, you guys halfway through this process asked for acronyms. So we have some chapters that have an acronym
table
and some don't. And that's just because, you know, that's just not a priority at this point.
And that's something that bothers me. But when you look at it in Redline, which is how we're doing all our edits, you don't catch any of those in Redline. So I agree. And it's just, I agree. That
just suggesting a refresh to the commission because you've got 4 new members since we looked at that. Well, at least we've got 2.
Yeah.
At the
three of us that don't remember what we saw.
I have a sample of what it looks like. I've been hesitant. I did put everything in the InDesign for housing and utilities just to see how usable and what it would look like. And I can share that with you. I don't know if I can pull it up right now. But we just don't want to do it before it's been approved because otherwise we're doing the work twice. So before formatting it, it's nice to have it approved.
Now, I'm not suggesting even that you'd be looking at this chapter.
So right.
Chose formatting of a chapter that's done. That would alleviate the concern, is what I'm thinking.
Timing-wise, you're waiting to update the tables. When do you think that is going to be in?
Look, we just redid your calendar today, so let me pull it up.
And then also the additional residential zone.
The additional residential. Oh, that would come back at the final because it's a minor. So what we have we have hopefully a recommendation for you on the 26th, and we're just waiting on our GIS guy, and he told us next week. So that gives us, hopefully you'll have it next meeting. And that for land use. Because we want to keep you guys going on this because it's fresh in your mind and just be done with it.
Is GIS doing us another map as well? Zone map?
I just sent him an email like literally 2 minutes ago when he said, could we have revised dates on our map? So I sent those 2 and I couldn't remember if that is a new date or I thought it was even older. So I think that might be the newest one. Because wasn't it even older?
It's not far.
Yeah, so I think, like, I actually think that's a new one.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say 10, but it might have been up there before.
So I think he did it, but I just sent him an email to check. And I heard you, Gary, so we're going to have revised dates if there's not one on there. Okay, so I think, it doesn't sound like you guys have any more substantial edits, so we'll just get you back the document.
Show me the chart.
Yeah, once the charts are done. So with that, I think we're on. That's it on our end.
What is this EDC presentation?
That is a, we have an Economic Development Commission that I am sharing the process that you guys are going through with the with them on the economic development element. So they are giving me their input, and that input will come to you. And I would,
so
I'm going to...
So it's not actually the EDC presenting to the...
I'm actually going to invite them to do the presentation.
Okay.
I don't know if they're going to take me up on it. But I, since it's going to be their work...
I demand that Jim Walker do the presentation.
There you go. I'll
anybody
let you know.
Less than that, I'm just not going to talk to them. Hear that, Jim?
I will let him know. If that's his new task.
Anything for good of the order?
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Motion by Rob, second by Brandon. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Meeting is adjourned. 8:29. Is that a record? No. The first meeting I chaired was a record. I chaired it like...
Might be the year record.
And we passed three things. So.
Oh, is this the one?
That's a machine right there.